You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Andrea Hunt. And one of the things that came up during this interview was the sort of sage life advice that is, it's maybe a good idea to avoid making huge life decisions when we are feeling emotional. And one of the times that this advice can come in handy is after we end a relationship. So here's a question for you to ponder before we start. What would you say is either the best decision or the worst decision you've made when you were in a post-breakup, highly emotional state? Because Andrea has quite the story of a big decision she made. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's go. Andrea Hunt, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here.
I'm so glad you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
You betcha.
Let's do it. All right. First question, easy peasy, get to know you question. What part of the world do you call home today?
So I'm in Germany now, but I just gave myself away with the you betcha. I'm from Minnesota.
You're from Minnesota. I didn't catch it. Okay.
All right. I was like, way to out myself. Like
I didn't even catch. That's all right. So before we dive in to the topic of today, I do want to give you a chance. I do want to get to know you a little tiny bit better and have the audience do too. Tell us something about you, like as a person. It can be anything. It can be about the people you live with, your pets, a hobby, just a little bit about you.
I am a curious world traveler. Like I've been to almost 40 countries. I've lived in about six. I love languages and people and cultures and different foods. And I love being outdoors, which is great because I live in Bavaria. So it's like the Bavarian Alps are right there. So I can go hiking and biking and swimming and all the other things that I like to do outside.
Yeah, so you're in Munich. Is that about right? Yeah. So when I was in Munich, we saw the river surfing.
Oh yeah.
The park.
Yes.
Yeah. That was awesome to watch.
It's like a city where you see somebody on the subway with their surfboard, and you're like, "But there's no sea around here. Like, where are they surfing?" And then the bridge.
The thing that got me was seeing the folks with the bikes and the surfboards. I was really impressed by the little trailers they put together to haul them around and was doing a little bit of sleuthing, like how can I rig my bike at home to transport my paddleboard, which I still have not done, but it's on the to-do list, somewhere on the to-do list, because it gets you out of the parking situation and an excellent conversation starter. All right, so now to get to the topic of the day, the topic you proposed is awesome and fun and a little bit complex, so we're going to dig into it, but this is when you moved from Georgia in the United States to China when you were 28 years old. Does that sound like a fun topic?
Sure. It's a very interesting story.
I believe it. Now, I do have some reflection for myself. I made a move when I was in my early 20s, not nearly as big a move as what you made. But I do have a personal theory, which is that most of us, when we do a move like this, are either moving towards someone or away from someone.
Very astute.
And I mean, and people will say, they'll couch it in, you know, I had a job or whatever. But if you poke, it's like, who was it? Who were you? So
yep.
You did include a little bit of information about that there was a relationship involved in this. So go ahead, tell us a little bit about that small piece of this story. Like, what was the push that was like, I'm fleeing across the globe?
I'm out of here. Yeah. When I got done with university, the plan was just to go to South America with my ex-boyfriend at the time. And he didn't end up coming, so I went by myself. And through a series of unfortunate events, the relationship dissolved while I was gone to South America. And we broke up. I broke up by email and everything like that. And I was just like, oh my God, I can't deal with this just yet. So I stayed in South America longer. I was in Argentina, went to Peru and Bolivia, met all these people. And I was in Bolivia in the hostel. And the hostel had its own brewery and they had a free pancake breakfast. So I was like, check, check, win. Like, this is amazing. And so when I was there, there was an American girl and she had been living in Korea. And she saved up, like South Korea saved up all this money. And there she was at the pancake breakfast. And she was just like, well, I just got done with, a year teaching in Korea. It was fantastic. And I was like, oh, that sounds so cool, but I'm not a teacher. Like I have a journalism degree. Like I'm planning on working in Atlanta. Like I was working at Georgia Public Broadcasting. And she's like, well, no, you don't have to be a teacher. You just have to have a bachelor's. And I was like, really? I'm like, yeah, I don't really know if that's something I want to do now. I'm like, I've always been interested in Chinese culture and like China. She's like, oh, you could totally do that. So fast forward, like I come back to the US. My ex is like already moved out. I have like this complete breakdown. It was very ugly. And I kind of had this realization where like I need to do something like totally drastic. Like everything reminds me of him. I am heartbroken. He had already moved to someplace else with somebody else. That's an extra little tidbit, which really like added some, fuel to the fire. And I'm just like, I'm not gonna do this. I need to go start over someplace. And I was applying for, jobs on Dave's ESL Cafe, by the way, if anyone wants to do that. And I
Okay.
found a place in Juji, which was I didn't even know what it was, where it was, okay, but it's outside of Hangzhou, maybe 2 hours from Shanghai. And they offered me a contract and they're like, guess what? It starts in 2 weeks. So if you can go ahead and get your ticket and like, it'll be room and board and we're sending you the papers for your visa. Come and like be here by the end of the month. And I was like, okay. And so like I did it. Like I had moved out of my apartment and I got to China. And the thing is that looking back, like it was one of the best decisions that I ever made for my entire life. But I didn't realize it at the time because, like, I mean, I got there and I was like in my little room and I just sat there on the bed and I just totally bawled. I was just like, oh my God, like, now I've really done it. Like, Andrea, this is really it. Like, are you crazy? Are you stupid? Like, what are you thinking? You don't know anyone here. You don't
That's so
speak
funny.
Chinese. And here you are and you can't go back. You can't undo this, But
That's
I mean,
the
think about.
other that reminds me of when people talk about skydiving. So when people talk about skydiving, at the exact moment they do it, it's terrifying and exhilarating, and then they get to the ground and like that was amazing. And usually a minute or two later, depending on how old you are, that's followed by, oh my gosh, what did I do? I jumped out of the plane. So, all right. So you move. You're 28 years old. You do what everybody says you should not do, which is make a big life decision in the aftermath of an emotional breakup. But we've
Couldn't
all
handle
done
it.
it. We've all done it. We've all done it. Dave's ESL. I love that that is there. So I want to back up a teeny tiny bit because we're talking about the move to China, but you put a little nugget in the form that you turned in to tell me about this, which this is not really actually the first decision like this that you made. So I want to zoom out a little bit because you had moved from wherever you were in the US at the time to Mexico when you were 20, I guess. So what was that move about? Because that's also, so you're, that's a, that's two international moves. So what took you to Mexico?
So, I wasn't very happy in high school. I mean, I was kind of hanging out with the wrong crowd. I didn't have a lot of support. I was getting into a lot of trouble, and I just was not in a point in my life where I was making very good decisions. And I didn't want to go to college right away because I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just wasn't happy in Minnesota, and I knew that I needed to go and like explore and kind of find myself, I wouldn't have said it in those words at the time. I was 20 and I was not that evolved, like with
Right.
my self-awareness, but I was just like, I just need to get out of here. And my grandmother was Mexican. And so like one of my, the ways that I really wanted to honor her was by learning Spanish. My other cousins at the time, who were also part Mexican, had not learned Spanish. And so I was like, that's what I'm gonna do. Like, I'm gonna go to Mexico. I'm gonna learn Spanish. So like I went there and I was, same thing. Sat there on the bed and cried like the first
There's a
night.
pattern.
You can see there's a pattern here, like of my bravery slash, afterwards having this like, meltdown. But again, like I think I had not been hanging around people who were very motivated and really doing things, and it just wasn't good for my growth long term. And when I was down there, like I've could feel myself like getting better at Spanish, and I just met all these people from all over the world, and I had Mexican friends, and it was just this completely other world that I had no idea that like I could be part of. And it was kind of like that's what planted the seed of in my head that like, okay, you know what, you're not ever stuck. You can always kind of go someplace if it's not working for you. You can always do something. You don't have to stay where you're not happy. And that's what I got out of that's
And
lesson.
so I had made an assumption when I read this on the form, but I don't think I was right. You picked up and moved, but you were just Were you a student there, or were you just picking up Spanish through the community and the environment?
I just went to a private Spanish language institute.
So
Like
you signed
I
up for
found
like
it
a
online.
language
Like
school,
there's like
yeah.
no internet at the time. It was a I found it in the back of like a Let's Go. No, it was the Berkeley Guide to Europe, 1996. So like this is before the internet. So keep that in mind where you like, you can't go get pamphlets and stuff like that. I found it in the back, and that's where I got this. And I found this guy named Sam Bull who did these kind of tailored programs. So the plan was Mexico, go learn Spanish, go to London, do volunteer work, which I did with disabled kids, and then go to China. But then the order of things got kind of messed up because I went to London and then I went back to Mexico.
Very, and at some point in there, you go to you pick up a bachelor's degree. Or
Yes,
was that
I
okay,
moved to
somewhere.
Georgia then, Athens, Georgia, and I got a bachelor's degree in journalism.
So it's interesting. So I also did study abroad in the 90s, 95, I think. So 96 when I moved my. So one of the craziest, it is so funny to now travel with the internet and all of the advantages of it. I remember being somewhere and getting off the train and looking in the book that we carried, whichever
Yes.
tourism book you had. And we were in, it was in Prague, and they were like, look for this guy who's going to take you to the hostel. And we all thought, we're like, that's no way. There's no way this information could possibly be correct because it's got a guy's name. But sure enough, you walk outside the train
He
station and
shows
there
up.
he is. And there he is. And we were all like, wow, what is this arrangement? But anyway, that's not the way things are anymore. Now it's just a matter of having your like data to update. But
Your
okay, so
phone.
your phone, exactly. Everything, Google Translate is the greatest thing, the greatest thing, in my opinion, as somebody who likes to
And
travel.
Max.
So, all right, so you move to Mexico, you work on your Spanish as a connection with your grandmother and that part of your heritage. That's amazing. Some of the pieces here are coming together because there is a little bit of a pattern, right? You made the decision to jump and go to Mexico. You're obviously a very motivated person. Today, you are a person who has lived and traveled in a lot of places. And you mentioned that China was actually on your list. I'm going to ask you this, and maybe you gave some foreshadowing. Before you moved to Mexico, did you have any idea of what you wanted to do as an adult? Like, I know you went on and got a degree in journalism, but was there any sense of that, or were you just searching for whatever would show up in front of you?
I didn't know honestly like what I wanted to do. I just knew that like at 19 I didn't want to go to college right away, and I needed to go out and figure myself out. I was very depressed and stuff like that in high school, and so I just knew that I had to go like breathe some spark back into myself and my life. And then over the course of the time that I was there, like I was taking photography courses in Mexico, and I had the idea first like I wanted to be like a photojournalist. And when I got to like Grady, this is the University of Georgia. There was like a journalism program where you could do telecommunication arts, which included like photography, but also like videography. So I had been doing video production in high school. We had like a school like news show that we did every single lunchtime. And so I was like, that's what I want to do. I need to get like into video production and all this stuff. So yeah.
That's how it was. All right. So it was very good. But you're obviously you've got a pretty high risk tolerance because for somebody to change, make that international move at such a young age, I think that definitely does. So you live in Mexico. You went to London. You travel somewhere. You travel through South America. I guess that's after you picked up a degree.
So I studied in Argentina several times. I took like a
You
history
studied.
course. So I
All right.
studied in Argentina a couple times, some Spanish. No.
That's back and forth from Georgia to Argentina. That was while you were a student or separate?
Student.
While you were a student. All right. So very good. So you're in South America where you're exploring in Argentina. Your relationship dissolves and you're breaking up by email. You come back to Georgia, which was your home base because that's where you were a student. How long, and you're only there a couple weeks before you go, a couple weeks, or how long are you there before you go to
It
China?
was like it was about 2 months. I think I came back in July because it was like World Cup, and I ended up starting like September 1st for like the school year.
You
So came
left
back,
Argentina
completely
during
fell
the World Cup?
apart, moved out of the apartment. Sorry.
You left Argentina during the World Cup? I mean,
Yes.
because I would have done exactly the opposite. I would have been like, I'm going to stay here.
I changed my ticket like already twice. I could not change it again. It's like it's not a cheap ticket. So like
Got it. Got it. That has got to be a fun place to be, though, for the World Cup. They're
it was
crazy.
amazing. It's
That's
amazing.
crazy. All right, so you're there for 2 months. You fill out the application for Dave's ESL. What was going through your mind when you were filling out the application? Like, did you consider anything else? Like, was there any
No,
other?
because it was kind of one of those situations, and it's happened to me several times in my life where I suddenly realized, like, not having any certainty for the future sometimes is actually a really big opportunity. Because I was like, okay, what could I do? What can I do now that I couldn't do when I had a relationship? And he never wanted to move to China. That was always my thing. Like, I was interested in Chinese since I was a little kid. I took classes. I went to Chinese camp and Concordia language camps in northern Minnesota. I was an odd kid, I guess. I was like, had all these interesting little hobbies, but. And so I was like, that's the first place that I want to go. And I can start over. I can go study Chinese. I hadn't planned on living there as long as I did, though. I mean, I was there almost like 7 years. I just wanted to go for like a year, teach for a year, go to Southeast Asia, and then go back to Argentina. That was my plan. But that didn't happen because I ended up moving to Beijing, studied Chinese there, and I was working for an ad agency during the Olympics. So it was 2008. There was like so
Okay.
much work for foreigners. Like, if you could speak Chinese and another language, you could do all this other, all these different things. But then when the global financial crisis happened, like in the fall of it was the fall of 2008,
Yeah,
I was talking to
roughly,
my
yeah.
dad, and I was like, "So I was going to come back," and my dad's like, "You know what? Like, I miss you, but I don't think it's a good time to come back to the US right now. Things are just shaky, like with the financial crisis. All these people had gotten laid off." And he's like, "If you have a job and there's work in China, why don't you just kind of wait this out and like kind of see what happens?" And every other foreigner that was around at the time did the same thing. Most of us stayed another 5 years at least. I mean, there was like a lot of growth in China, so
That is amazing. That is okay. So they're very good. Now, so you were well traveled and well studied before you made this jump across the globe and got to China. But you did describe it as the scariest, bravest, stupidest thing you'd ever
yeah.
done. Those were the words you used. I copied them so I didn't make a mistake.
Exactly. In that order, like
Yeah. And you already said you're like, it was a really pivotal, great change. But what was so different about this move from the US to China that made it scary, brave, and stupid?
because China is a completely other world. Like, culturally, there's just so many things that you don't understand. It's not even just the language. It's like culturally, the difference between East and West is really hard to understand unless you kind of go live it. And then the thing is that it's not just one thing. Like, for one, in a small town of a million where I was living, there were five foreigners. And so, like,
Wow.
and the thing is, like, people take pictures of you. Like, they've never seen a foreigner in real life. So, like, sometimes you kind of feel like this, dancing monkey that's just walking down the street and people are taking, like, selfies with you and all this stuff. So, like, there's a sense of humility because you stand out. You don't blend in. Like, everywhere you go, people are really curious. Sometimes it's just weird. People will come up and, like, touch your arm and be like, "Oh, wow." Like, just, skin or your hair. And I don't know. It's just the language and the culture. There's so many different traditions and practices and ways of doing things that some of it's very obviously different. And then the other things you don't realize when you might be making, this cultural faux pas, and even like working in an office. I mean, and I worked for the Chinese state radio, and so there were very specific hierarchies and things that you could mention on the radio and things that you could not mention on the radio. And so, like, I
Sure.
had to change one of my reports one time because I mentioned Ai Weiwei, who was a dissident at the time. I had to completely like redo my radio report, take that out like 5 minutes before it was supposed to go live on like Beijing Drive, like at 6 o'clock. So just those kind of things. It's a totally other world. But on the other hand, like, I just realized that, like, if I can do this in China and you're constantly just pivoting and adjusting and, like, not getting everything that what you want, and just having to be
Yeah.
like, all right, managing,
Yeah. So it's not, I mean, it's one of the things, it's a culture and it's a language, but you at this point had already picked up a couple different languages and you had studied a little bit of Chinese at a language institute, but I don't think you spoke Chinese when you got there. Is that right?
No, I hadn't studied it for over like 14 years or something like that, 10, 12,
So
something like that, since I was in like middle school. And then I was 28 then. So, like, a
yeah,
lot of time
long time.
passed.
And it's a big jump because it's more than just words, it's also the alphabet. and the way they write things. So it when we talk about the culture, when you go from Miami to, Cancun, I recognize the letters. They're not put together in the way that I would put them. But if I go to some place where the alphabet is different, I look up at the sign and I'm like, ah, it could be anything. Could be.
Well, their characters is like they don't even have an alphabet that you
Yeah.
can translate like that. Their
Right.
characters and each of the radicals have a different meanings and stuff. So it's just a completely different way of doing things, I
Completely
guess.
different. Completely different. So I would think that the sense of disconnect and difference was heightened in the beginning compared to, yeah, that would be my guess. So before you went, so you make this big change, you make it fast. You've got a referral from somebody you met in a hostel who did a similar program, but actually in a totally different country. You fill out a form, they say, come right away. You zip, zap, zoop, you're in a completely different places. But before you did this, what hopes or dreams or expectations did you think were going to happen? You ended up staying a lot longer than you expected, but what were you hoping would happen as a result of this big change?
Of China. My idea was just to kind of travel around at the time. Like I wanted to teach students and like teach English for a little bit. I had done that a tiny bit in Argentina. I'm not a natural teacher or something like that. Like I said, like I'm a kind of a motivator and like a coach, but I am good at English teaching apparently. But I also, that's another component. I wasn't familiar with children up until that point. And like
Okay.
they told me that I was going to be dealing with middle school, okay? The reality was I had two giant classes of like 40 students each that were five. So 5 years old, 45-year-olds. And then I had two classes of those. And then I also had second grade and fourth grade that I would come in and teaching this. So like I had no idea what I was doing. Like I didn't particularly even, I wasn't fond of children at the time. Now I love children as a result of this because this completely changed. I mean, those were like my kids. I was with these kids for 10 days straight and then 4 days off, and then they would go home to their parents. And they
Oh my
knew.
gosh, that's so crazy. So this was like a living program. So you were okay. When you said teaching, I figured they were showing up for like after school
Oh, like a
English.
boarding school. It was a boarding school, so
Wow.
I lived there. Yeah.
So 10 days and then 4 days. Sorry to interrupt. That caught me by
No
surprise. That
problem.
caught me by surprise. All right. So you wanted to explore and you wanted to do this. You didn't have any expectations about teaching, but then you fall in love with these kids.
And then I also got like, to have the holidays and stuff like that. So I was able to travel a lot. I got room and board. I ended up meeting some people in my city and having some friends. And then it was close enough to Hangzhou and Shanghai that I could go there pretty much every weekend. So
All right. So, how long was the teaching contract like? Because so, how long did
nine
you do that?
months.
9 months. And then you decided to stay. You called home to your dad and said, maybe I'll come home. And then you decided to stay. How did it happen that you stayed?
Well, no. So, 2007, I had planned to kind of go back to Southeast Asia. I wanted to do Vietnam and, Thailand, and I went to a rock festival called MIDI Rock Festival in 2007 up in Beijing, and I was like, this is just awesome. Like, there were so many different kinds of Chinese people, like all these like Chinese punks and like metal guys and like ska, like, and they had all of these bands playing and everything. And I was like, this is so cool. I just had no idea that China could have this. I mean, like, I had gone to a rave on the Great Wall in 2005 when I went to study Chinese there. That's actually something that they do every year, rave at the Great Wall. But this was like a huge music festival with just thousands and thousands of people and just really cool Chinese people. And I was like, I need to move up here. Like, I need to do this because I was living in this small town where everybody knew me, everybody was pointing at me, they were staring. I mean, they were nice, but like, I felt like a alien, and so then once I was up there, I was studying at BLCU, the Chinese, it's like Beijing Cultural Language University. Met a whole bunch of people, and through that, once I got done, that's where I found an internship at an ad agency.
All right,
Yeah.
which brings you back, that closes the loop and brings you back to using your journalism skills.
Yes.
I'm not sure, but my favorite part of this story so far might be you decided to stay based on a music festival. Also, I have an outstanding invitation. A friend of mine wants to do the Great Wall Marathon, which I'm on the fence about. But I think the rave on the Great Wall has an entirely different appeal. Did not
Amazing.
know that that was a thing, but I love it. I love it. So you st how long? Remind me again. 7 years you stayed in China?
Almost seven. Like, I guess I left in in like September, so it wasn't a full year. It was like
Yeah.
six and, some change or whatever. But yeah, it was amazing. I mean, like, I wouldn't necessarily want to go back now. Like, I love Europe. Like, I love living here and stuff like that. But I think that part of my life in China definitely kind of formed who I was or who I became as a person, because those were just really formative years that I met people from all over the world. Like, I also realized what I was capable of. I also, you really understand also like the global supply chain and like how things
Sure.
work. Like, because you meet people who are like, there was like a Norwegian guy. He's like, yeah, we, fish the salmon in the morning. We fly it to China. They go ahead and like package it up and like clean it, and we ship it back. And we're like, why would you do that? They're like, because it's cheaper. So it's all these things that you don't really realize, and you're like, wow, is that how they do that? Okay. Like, so
That is, I would not have said that that would, I would not have known that that was how that happened. But one of the things that is also different when you're outside of the US bubble is the concept of how far apart things are. Like, so we have a different view of that, very US center view of that when we're here, right? So, all right. So you've had some distance from this big decision of making the jump when you were 28. And if you were to think back, and maybe it's what you just said, actually, what is a shift that you look back and you realize that you made as a result of making that decision and making that trip?
You mean of moving to China, like in general,
Moving
like
to China, yeah. What is one personal
I've learned
shift that you, yeah, what is one personal shift that you would tie back to that decision?
that I can always make a decision and change things. I'm never
Okay.
stuck.
Never
I think that's
stuck.
the biggest thing. Like, you're never stuck. You can always do one thing different. And sometimes, like, I mean, there have been points in my life where, like, literally, things were really difficult, and you don't feel like you have any power over anything. And I mean, like, I started my morning routine during a time in Germany where, like, I was working for a startup, like, loved this job, like, absolutely loved this job. My colleagues were fantastic. Went through a different breakup. Like, historical, to a different breakup, lost that job because a company acquired us, so they let go of everybody. I ended up getting rehired with them, but that was like there were like several months in between there where I was like, what am I doing? I'm here in Germany by myself, like, blah blah blah. And sometimes you have to be like, okay, what do I have control over? I'm gonna do a morning routine. Every morning I'm gonna get up, I'm gonna write my intentions, I'm gonna do my yoga, I'm gonna go swimming. That's what I'm gonna do. Like, I don't have control over anything else. I'm gonna keep sending out job applications. But I can start my morning in a structured way that makes me feel like I have some power. And sometimes that's all you can do. You know what I mean? Like, hopefully you're not in that kind of position where that's literally all the power that you have. But like, what I'm saying is that you can always find something to do to give yourself that sense of groundedness and strength.
Yeah, no, absolutely. All right. So you have been everywhere. You have been so many places. You have lived in six different countries. When people ask you where you are from, what do you say these days?
US.
So generally, you just claim the entire country. I think that
I
works.
just said from the US because not everyone out abroad knows Minnesota. Like, keep
Sure.
in mind that people know sports teams. Like, sometimes people will know the Timberwolves. I don't even follow the Timberwolves, but like, I always say US and they say, where? Minnesota. Because they'll say,
Okay.
which city?
Right. But it's all right. Very good. Now, so in a minute, we're going to do final questions, but I want to give you a chance to talk about what you do these days as a profession and how people can connect with you because we've talked about this amazing journey and all the things you've done along the way. But you are not actually an English teacher these days. So tell us what you do and how people can connect with you.
Yes. So now I'm an EFT empowerment coach. So I did my certificate for coaching during lockdown because we had not one, two, but three different lockdowns here in Germany. And I decided to use that time to go ahead and get a certification because, like many people in 2020, I also got laid off. And I was like, same situation, like, okay, everything is uncertain, but I have a space open in front of me. What would I like to do? And I had been thinking about becoming a coach for a really long time because I've done a lot of personal growth. Like, there were a lot of things that I just had to like learn about, like boundaries and self-awareness, and authenticity was never something that I struggled with, but I had like a lot of other things with like assertiveness and whatever. And so I decided to get that certification. And then EFT became a natural part of that, like where I got certified in that as well, because EFT tapping, it's a mind-body technique, by the way, if anybody doesn't know. And you can use it for releasing stress and anxiety and, you know, getting more emotional resilience because you can always recalibrate and bounce back from whatever things that happen. But what I really like to use it for is for motivation and belief woundings and things like perfectionism and imposter syndrome, because if you can release the fear and resistance and, you know, the lack of belief in yourself, then you can become more confident and you can feel more empowered and you can feel more certain about yourself and secure in your abilities. So that's what I like to do. I combine those things now these days.
Very good. All right. So that is great. I'm a big fan of EFT. So I think it's a very cool thing. You do have a special offer for the audience, which I'm going to share, right? You have a Recreate Transformation 2025 Recreate Transformation, which is 10 sessions to unlock your potential. So that's a lot. And so you can do that normally, these 10 60-minute private sessions, which I suppose you do with people all over the world, like just like I'm talking to you today, are usually 999 euros. You have a free book about EFT, which there's a link in the show notes and in the email I send out. And there's a coupon with the hashtag perfectly imperfect where listeners can get 100 euros off that package above. So that's an amazing discount. And I'm so happy that you're sharing that with the audience. Thank you for that generous give. So now we're going to close out with three final random questions. These are about nothing and they
Ready.
have no importance, just for fun. All right. So I wrote these before we had the conversation, but you mentioned this, and so this is going to be really interesting. Do you have a set morning routine? And if so, do you want to share with us what it is?
Absolutely. I've kind of perfected my morning routine over the last, like, I'd say 15 years. So I wake up, I first do like a meditation, usually that's like 5 to 7 minutes long. I do EFT. There's a Brad Yates specifically that I do. It's called Ask for No Resistance. It's a just to kind of ground you and yeah, calm you in the morning. Also, Amazing Day Quickie. That's another one by Brad Yates. You can find it on YouTube for free. And I do yoga stretching. So like either yoga with Adrian or yoga with Cassandra.
Oh
And
my
I
gosh,
set my
yeah.
intentions for the day. But I do that every single day in some order.
That's fantastic. All right, very good. All right, so do you read or listen to books? And if so, what was the last book you read or listened to?
So actually, I got somebody recommended the E Squared book. I don't know if you've read it.
No,
It's just,
I don't know that.
it's about like manifestation, but with the reticular activating system.
Okay.
So not like woo-woo manifestation, but like you can train your brain to be like, I will see purple cars today, whatever.
That
And
is,
then
yep.
you, and so like it's supposed to work for other things. And so one of my friends was telling me that I was like, that sounds interesting. Like, why not? So yeah, I've been trying to go. There's like 12 little experiments. And her name is Pam Grout. So it's kind of interesting. That's what I'm, it's my sauna book. So I can just sit there and
Sit in the
read.
sauna and read. If I go, I'm not a sauna person. It's like not the place for me. And so if I'm in a sauna, all of my focus is on breathing and not passing out. I'm like,
What are you reading in the sauna? It's like
don't.
after, once you get out.
After, okay, that's much better because I'm always
Sweating all
amazed
over the
by.
pages and like.
Exactly. I'm always amazed by people who are like relaxed in the sauna when every cell in my body is like, okay, has it been 60 seconds? Like, can I get out? Like, how are you?
Well, I find like the ones in the States, like I always hated it because it felt really dry and like suffocating. But the way that they do it in Germany is you have these little sessions and they'll dump some water and they like take it very seriously. They like fan you and then they like pour some more water and they like fan you. So it gets very intensely hot for maybe 5, 10 minutes. And then you go out and you like take a super, super cold shower and it's just like really revitalizing. So now I like it.
I believe I will put that under the category of things that I would probably enjoy if I knew how to do them better. There's a long list, there's a long list of those things, and I believe
Was
all of
me,
them.
like,
Yeah.
you know.
And I'm always happy to try. I'm always happy to try new things. All right. So if you could have a superpower, like a superpower, like the movies, like Avengers and things like that, like a magical superpower, what would it be? I've stumped
That's a really hard one. I don't
you.
know. Maybe like just to always have perfect health and be able to give everybody else perfect health.
Okay, there you go. Very good. I
Is that
stumped
something I
you.
became more cautious about the older that I've gotten, I think like health is just so important, especially with burnout and stuff like that. People, it's sometimes something that you really take it for granted until, something happens. So you hurt your knee or till you like, and yeah.
It is definitely something that we do take for granted while we have it. And that's, it's, and the downside of that in so many ways, but one of them is that you're not really fully enjoying your health when you're not aware of the fact that it can disappear, which is one of those weird things, right?
Yeah.
And then, like, even if you get something minor like a cold and you feel crappy for a while, then, remember the first day you're able to breathe a little bit when you're getting over a
Yeah.
cold and you're like, oh, I'm so thankful. So thankful for the air coming into my body.
Yeah.
It's such a reframe for such a minor thing. All right. That's it, Andrea Hunt. Thank you so much for being an amazing guest.
Thank you so much for having me, Amy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.